This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and I'm continuing to enjoy the many benefits of being live from WNYC Studios in New York City this week.
This is a Manhattan-bound Q local train. The next stop is Parkside Avenue.
Making radio this way is truly different because I'm sharing space with our morning team. Our director, Jay, gives visual cues to wrap a question or stretch a segment.
All right, watch your clock here, about 30 seconds left. Just getting to that last question there.
Our sound designer, Vince, can sense change and conversational energy and create new audio tracks to support the story. Our line producer, Jackie, catches my enthusiasm with a response and crafts a perfect edit to highlight it.
She was so good, I don't want to edit any of that.
Now, making radio this way is not only a song, it's a dance. At our best, communicating with one another is always multilingual. You don't have to understand all the vocabulary of American Sign Language to glean the emphasis, emotion, and structure of a gifted ASL interpreter.
He said,
you don't have to speak Italian to be moved by an operatic aria. And we are a multilingual nation. About 1 in 5 Americans speaks more than one language in their home. But search the world of podcasts, and it's tough to find audio storytelling that moves beyond an English-only framework. Now, we do have a great one here at WNYC Studios, La Brega, and you should check it out. But it's still rare, which is at least part of why Danielle Alarcón has been recognized this year as a MacArthur Genius Fellow. Alarcón is the executive producer and host of NPR's Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. He's a contributing writer at The New Yorker and a novelist. He also teaches at the Columbia Journalism School. Alarcón's work dives deep into the social and cultural ties that connect Spanish-speaking populations across the United States and Central and South America. His podcast, Radio Ambulante, which he started in 2012, features a mix of investigative journalism and interviews and covers a wide range of topics, from a refugee crisis in Venezuela to killer bees in Brazil, to the ripple effects of Pablo Escobar's purchase of 4 hippos in Colombia.
Un hipopótamo. Paseando como si nada por las calles de Doradal, un pueblo colombiano que queda cerca del río Magdalena. Es de noche y camina lento, no se ven los niños que gritan, solo se ve el animal enorme.
I spoke with Alarcón about his work and why it's important to have his podcast be in Spanish.
There was nothing like what I was imagining and what my wife and I were thinking of producing. I think we have to go back to the origin story briefly. I was asked to do a radio documentary for the BBC about these kind of phantom towns in Peru that where the people move, everyone moves to the city. And that experience of reporting it and then having all the voices in Spanish basically cut out was so disappointing to me. And that really answers your question, Melissa, because it was a sense of, wow, there's these very important stories to be told, and yet the protagonists of these stories aren't able to tell them the way they would want to tell them. And I just felt like something was missing. So Carolina and I started thinking about what that show would sound like, and we just didn't know any better than to say, okay, well, we might as well make it ourselves.
I frequently teach Gloria Enzandula's La Frontera, Borderlands. And, fairly frequently have students who say, why doesn't she just translate the Spanish? Why do we have to read these parts that we don't understand?
Yeah, and I should be clear, I think translation is important. Translation is wonderful. I've translated books before and poetry, and I've read tons of stuff in translation. But I do think reading a transcript of something that was said in a different language doesn't quite convey the humor, the emotion, the placement of silences, all those magical things that radio does that if you have a voiceover, you're probably going to miss. And also there's another thing too, translation, especially with all the diversity of accents and types of Spanish that are spoken in Latin America and in the U.S., translation into English sort of flattens that. And one of the things that's beautiful about Rambulante, when we started Rambulante thinking about this project, we were like, wow, it'd be so great to have a story from El Salvador and then a story from Mexico and a story from Chile and a story from Colombia and Cuba. And it's all these different types of Spanish. It's not, there is not one monolithic Spanish. And have them all together and just celebrate all those accents and all those unique vocabularies that each country will have. I thought that was just something that would make the show itself special, the fact that it was regional.
Has access to Spanish language storytelling improved? Has it gotten better in recent years? Or what are some of the key gaps that still exist in our media landscape?
Well, there has been an explosion of new shows coming out of Latin America, and I think that's wonderful and something to be celebrated. I mean, for Rambulante, I can tell you what our challenges are in terms of there's more places we want to cover. There's places where it's harder to find the right collaborators to work with. And you can just sort of look through our catalog and see we've done very little reporting from certain countries and a lot more reporting from others, you know, and that's just one of the complications of our work, but we're trying to fix that. I think the other thing is there sometimes isn't, I think a recognition of the value of Spanish language journalism. And I don't mean it necessarily at the national level, but I mean like there are really important local Spanish language reporting projects that are serving very specific communities. They don't get any awards, they don't get any attention, but they're really doing that service journalism that is vital. It would be great to see some of that get the attention that it deserves.
So I'm wondering, because you are also a writer, the ways that telling story through audio has potentially impacted how you write or how you think about the creation of narrative in the written form.
When I wrote fiction, I always read my work aloud, and I was always really into the way it felt in my ears. You know, that was very important to me. You know, and I spent more than a few nights, you know, in my 20s at the New York Poets Cafe listening to spoken word artists. And I spent countless hours listening to, you know, singers and poets and rappers and the musicality of all kinds of speech, and just really was something that I cared about deeply. I also think that, you know, storytelling or narrative journalism and podcasts it shares a lot with literature. You know, when you're reading a book, it's like the author's whispering in your ear, and it's very similar to the experience of having your earbuds on and the intimate relationship you might have with a storyteller in audio. To me, they felt like complementary art forms or complementary, you know, narrative strategies. So this was something that in some ways it felt like not an illogical leap at all, but something that sort of made perfect sense to me. When we started Rambulante in my early 30s, I was in my early 30s, and I'd been, you know, writing, I'd written books and, you know, I'd written stories and long pieces of nonfiction and a couple of novels. And I was sort of like, you know, I sort of knew my way around. I sort of knew what I was doing. And it was so liberating to not know what I was doing. It was such a wonderful experience. And I really recommend it to anybody to just step into the unknown and try something new. You don't even know what rules you're breaking because you don't know the rules. And it's super liberating and it's scary. And it helped me with my writing tremendously because it sort of, you know, you're back at the point of where you're crawling and then walking and then, you know, ideally at some point running, but you know, just to go back and hit that learning curve again, it just reminds you that, oh, there's so much more I can do and learn.
I hear you speak that like, not only like a true teacher, but as a true student, someone who takes genuine pleasure, excitement, thrill from the unknown, from not even mastery, but just the attempts, right? The getting there, the finding something new. So what are some of the other corners that you haven't explored? What are some of the trails that you imagine, trailheads that might be in front of you, that you'd like to start walking down as you're thinking about the ways to do storytelling and journalism in Spanish-speaking context?
For not this season, but the previous season of Rambulante, I did a stop-motion animation for the trailer. of Radio Ambulante. But yeah, I spent a week sort of cutting up old magazines and making a 2-minute film, video, trailer, whatever. And I was immersed in it, spent hours a day doing it. And I remember thinking to myself, like, God, I could really get into this. You know, it was like, this would be really fun, like, to do forever. I mean, I think that there's always more that I would like to do. And I guess the most amazing and truly humbling thing about the MacArthur is someone decided that it was worth giving me the time and the opportunity to just see what happens, to just try. So I intend to be brave and try new things and maybe fail, maybe not. And in the spirit of learning that you mentioned, I think that's the whole point.
I gotta say, one of the things I've seen fall out of the educational experience for so many college students in particular, but also prior to college, is the willingness to explore languages that are not their first language to speak, because they're often not going to get an A. I mean, there's a group of students who will, but there's other students who think, man, I'd like to understand Greek, or I'd like to try to get better at Spanish, but I'm terrified because I've got this GPA to hold on to. And walking into the unknown space of new language may mean that I do not succeed. And I'm wondering if you've thought at all about how we can, again, make some of that space for creativity, for exploration, but particularly for the exploration in language, so that we maybe can speak to each other in more than one language.
Yeah, I love that question, but I would expand the definition of language to say, you know, artistic language, musical language, scientific language, historical language. I mean, I think that there's sometimes in education too much emphasis on mastery and not enough on curiosity and on the real rewards of just trying something and maybe failing, but, you know, becoming conversant in a new way of speaking and approaching the world. You know, this is not just a problem of education. It's, you know, it's also a problem in families. It's also, you know, me trying to get my kids to speak Spanish is also a challenge, you know? I think we can only sort of push the idea that real connection requires real intention. You know, when you make that effort to try to learn a new language, you're going to get it back in so many ways that you can't even expect. You know, and my French is frankly atrocious, but I've had really, really great conversations in my busted French with people that otherwise they would have been having to do all the work of translating into a language that I speak. And just by being able to, you know, stammer out a few phrases and understand a little bit of what they were saying, I feel like I was able to demonstrate that I too was making an effort, and real communication requires real effort on two sides.
Danielle Alarcón is the executive producer and host of NPR's Radio Ambulante podcast and a contributing writer at The New Yorker and a novelist. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been a pleasure.